years of Reformation. When we all look back how it started, we have to go back a little further than that, than October 31st, 1517. In 1510, Martin Luther went to visit the holy city of Rome. In medieval times, Rome was the center of the world. It surely wasn't a pleasant trip. It was a trip without luxury, especially for a poor monk like he was. Mostly he had to walk. Sometimes maybe a carriage offered a ride for him. What a relief for his sore muscles and his tired feet covered with blisters. 880 miles, or as we would say in Germany, 1,400 kilometers one way. What a trip. But finally he was there. How much he had heard about this town before. How many nights he had dreamt about the beauty and holiness of the city, about visiting the places where the martyrs died, where the Apostle Paul himself preached and was buried. The 20-year-old Martin Luther was a poor monk. Yes, he was highly educated, well-trained in the monastery and at the university. But before anything of what we call the Reformation today could happen, Martin Luther needed to leave his home and to leave his daily life. I'm sure he could only change his view towards the world as a result of what he saw in Rome, because what he saw was disgusting. So much misery, prostitution everywhere, unbelievable poverty on the one side, corruption and decadence on the other. People paid the clergy for absolution for their sins, and not only for themselves, but also for those who died before, to prevent them from remaining in hell. But please don't think that life in those times in Germany was so totally different than this was. Of course, there have been poor people in Wittenberg and rich lords and businessmen. Of course, there have been prostitutes, and corruption was a common way to get things done. Of course, people paid for absolution of their sins by the clergy. But Martin Luther didn't expect this to be in Rome. It's just not right. So when Martin Luther came back from Rome to Germany, to his home, his view had changed. He looked around his hometown, and what he saw was almost the same he saw before. But what was normal for him when he left was now a reason to stand up and protest. Dear congregation, where do we have to go in order to be able to gain an unconstrained and clear view of our society and our church? What would we recognize as we looked again with a relentlessly honest look? What would we see? Would our world be shaken if we saw the truth? For Martin Luther, the Rome trip was an eye-opener which pushed him to a new view of the whole world, of his world. Maybe you have also experienced a situation that was an eye-opener, a moment when you started to look differently on an aspect of life, religion, or partnership. I can name one of those moments for myself very clearly. It was 3 years ago when we visited the United Church of Chapel Hill the last time, and we went to Greensboro to visit the Civil Rights Museum. I need to tell you a little bit about myself to understand what changed happened then. I visited the United States the first time 30 years ago. I lived in Pennsylvania for a year and worked as a pastor at a church. I visited many states many times. Many times I visited the United States as a traveler. I traveled about 20,000 miles throughout the whole country with a car right after I finished school. I have stayed in hotels and several families in California and Texas, in Chapel Hill, in Carboro, as I have to say. And I really would say I got an insight, a little bit of it. For an average German, of course, I have. I'm not an expert, but I've got an impression and I've made a strong connection to this country and to its people. So I thought I know a bit of it. And of course, I knew what was going on from an outsider's perspective view, but when I went to Greensboro last time, and we did so on Friday too, I suddenly realized that racism has to do a lot with my personal life, and that everyday racism still exists, and that I myself am privileged and pushing that racism forward instead of pushing it back. Looking into history, it seems that the structure of institutional oppression belongs to us, belongs to human beings. It is almost as if if we humans cannot do anything other than make others live in dependence so that we become able to live our lives as we want them to live. Let us look back. The Egyptians enslaved the Israelites in order to be able to build the magnificent buildings. The Romans attacked the foreign countries to enslave the people and took whatever they could to maximize their profit, their power. I could go on with many examples. And now a huge time skip. After Second World War happened in Europe, Germany invited the so-called guest workers, the Gastarbeiter, to come to Germany, and they welcomed those at the stations with flags because they needed them to build up our country. And today we all profit from unjust economical systems around the globe to make us richer so that we are able to buy new smartphones every year we want to. While Martin Luther criticized his church at that time, he realized how bad his system is. A system in which a person is made to be terrified by punishing God in order to squeeze money out of him or her, to increase the power and the wealth of the clergy, and to help to build churches and to satisfy the ego of the ruling class. Just to make it clear, it was everything but easy for Martin Luther to understand this, because what he saw was his life. It was just normal. It was just how the world worked those days. It was absolutely normal, nothing to wonder or to be surprised about. Just as it is normal for us that people get fewer chances in life than we do. Just as it is normal for us to exploit our planet because everybody does. Just because, is it normal for us that people with migrant background will have disadvantages in courage, in career choices, in finding accommodations, or even social life? It's the same in Cologne as it is in the United States. But when Luther realized that things in his church had to change, his society had to change, he never expected that what he did could really transform the world. And he never thought that what he did would have consequences for the entire planet, for the people who live on it. But his ideas and his constant insistence had consequences, not only for the church, but also for him personally. He was threatened, he was spat on, he was outlawed. They tried to silence him in every way they could. He became mentally ill. He suffered repeatedly from depression. Dear sisters and brothers, anyone who believes in his convictions, who wants to make changes to existing systems, will inevitably face the resistance of all of those who feel comfortable with the system. They feel comfortable in the existing system because it serves them. We feel comfortable in the system because it serves us. Their comfort, their wealth, their status, their world image, our world, our standard. We are pleased by it because it helps us to live the way we do. Going back and face the Egyptian slavery, It was good for them to use the slaves of in their perspective to build those pyramids we admire still today. For the slave owners in the United States, slavery was a guarantee for their prosperity. For us, the exploitation of workers in the mines of in Africa is a guarantee for our new smartphones. Anyone who expresses these uncomfortable truths makes himself unpopular. Nobody likes to hear that. We people generally want everything to remain as it is, at least when we are doing well. And external changes are almost always perceived as a threat. Those who put their fingers in the wound are denounced as a cause of problems. They are splitters, provocateurs, and traitors. And this is how it was for Martin Luther back then, and this is how it is today for those who speak out the truth. You realize I jump back and forth in history, but I'm trying to show you that there have always been people who benefit from systems of oppression. And these people who stand on the side of those who benefit are always also us. Changes in society are almost always associated with losses. Men lost the sole right to vote for decades, and they found countless reasons on the debate on the right to women's suffrage as to why the male privilege should remain. What is now self-evident today was unthinkable not long ago. Changes cause anxiety, but changes are necessary and belong to humanity. If it were otherwise, we would still be sitting in cave today and would be hunting and gathering. My look at the history at the civil rights movement dealing with this issue has become a challenge for myself, for my life. Thought that I read by Ta-Nehisi Coates provoke me and make me think, because for the first time I perceive things I have not seen before. It's like when you see it once, you can't pretend you haven't seen it. I don't agree to all that Ta-Nehisi Coates says. I'm not a hopeless person. I want to spread hope to the world. But he helps me to understand that it's with you. It's your problem too. It's not just mine. Ta-Nehisi Coates leads me to look at my own world, my society, and the view of the civil rights movement does help me to look at my life, my church life, my world with a critical eye, and to think about where do we have to improve and change our structures in a very personal way, as well as in a general way for my church, my society, my government. So, what would Martin Luther's thesis look like today? What do I need to protest against to be called a Protestant for a reason? And what do I do? What do I have to give? Need to give up? What will I have to give up and change to get closer to what God asks me to be? Those are hard questions to answer if you want to ask those honestly. A look in the Bible can help us to find the root. Over 3,500 years, God made very clear what the path should be. He said, He has shown you what is good. What does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. So, let's get creative, motivated and fearless to do what needs to be done, to speak out what needs to be said, to change the world to the better for all.